Ambassador Pardue, could you give us an idea of your peacekeeping activities, starting from when you began working in Bosnia and going through your time as ambassador to Bulgaria?
Yes, after a complete military career, I was working in the office of the Secretary of Defense on Yugoslavia, and I joined the Holbrooke negotiating team in August of 1995 after there was a tragic accident and my boss was killed. I replaced my boss on the team. Then after the Dayton Agreement was completed in December of 95, I stayed at the State Department and worked on Bosnia implementation. And then war in Kosovo broke out, so I was involved in the air campaign at the end of the conflict in Kosovo. And then after that, in 2001, I was sent to Macedonia, and I was a U.S. negotiator, working with the EU negotiator, and we helped achieve the Ohrid Agreement in preventing a war in Macedonia. And I stayed involved in the Balkans through other assignments until Kosovo declared independence in 2008. I'm a former U.S. ambassador to Bulgaria and Deputy Assistant Secretary General of NATO.
Taking into account your involvement in all those negotiations, how have the peace agreements held up today?
Well, the Dayton Agreement was at its core a negotiated settlement to a conflict, and the primary purpose of it was to end a war, and it did that. It set up an imperfect national government. It was a negotiated solution, and it was the best we could do at the time, in which you had a very, very weak central government and very strong two essentially states, and the states actually have almost as much power as the national government. So it's flawed, but it restored peace, and peace continues. Bosnia is a sovereign independent state. All the countries of the region have issues to one degree or another. And overall, the whole engagement of the United States in the Balkans was a major diplomatic success for the U.S. and its European allies. But, you know, there are still challenges ahead of them, but the region is at peace and looking for EU and NATO membership and development of democracy.
Your entry into the State Department was somewhat unconventional, particularly with your military background. How has that perspective helped you in negotiations, particularly compared with the experiences of career diplomats?
Well, I had to adjust to life with the diplomatic service. I hold the Foreign Service in the highest regard. I loved my military career, but the Foreign Service of the United States is a national treasure and does great service to the country. It's actually the first line of defense in our national security. It just a set of circumstances thrust me into the situation. As I mentioned, an accident made me the Secretary of Defense representative to the Holbrooke team, and from there I just stayed involved in diplomacy for the next 13 years.
In your book, Peacemakers, you mentioned that one of the big success factors in the Balkan negotiations was the cooperation we had with our European allies, whether it was specific countries like Great Britain and France, or multinational organizations like NATO. Could you elaborate on this and how it's changed?
Yes. The success in the Balkans involved a number of factors that I outline in my book, Peacemakers. The first of those is American leadership. The international community was struggling from 1991, when the conflict started to break out, until 1995, the U.S. was on the sidelines and didn't participate. But when we entered the game, we brought focus and unity to the international effort. Secondly, the peace settlements were all based on democratic values. American leadership and democratic values governed the outlook of the international community. We did it in close cooperation with our traditional European allies in Europe. We have other allies around the world, but the strongest and most important to the security of the United States is the relationship we have with our European allies. And we also involved major international organizations, the United Nations, the European Union, and NATO. Now, that's a stark contrast to the foreign policy of the current administration. President Trump has set us out on a nationalist and unilateralist path, which, frankly, I think is destructive to our long-term security because it breaks with our European allies. It makes us look singular. There's a lot of contempt for international organizations, and I just don't think that's the way to success. So I'm very comfortable with the success that the United States was able to achieve in our engagement in the breakup of Yugoslavia. I'm very concerned and I'm frankly alarmed at the direction of this government toward the structures and diplomacy that got us our security for the last 70 years.
At the time, Russia was considered one of those traditional European allies since they were party to the negotiations, but our role with them has changed greatly over the years. How has that affected the international sphere?
The cooperation between the United States and Western Europe and Russia was probably at its historical peak on reaching the settlement in Bosnia. But once Putin rose to power in 1999, the relationship with Russia deteriorated rapidly, and it continued to deteriorate. Every U.S. president since Bill Clinton has tried to establish a proper and cooperative relationship with Russia, but Putin wants none of that. He's reverted back to the old Soviet attitude toward the West, that is, he would like to undermine democracy, including the democracy of the United States, and to separate the United States from its closest European allies. And they work very hard to do that. I think the Putin regime has decided that instead of confronting the West with military force, they will do it through corruption and greed and the undermining of democratic institutions and the promotion of extreme nationalism, and that's happening all over the place, to include in the United States.
Would you say this rules out major cooperation in the future, apart from the smaller things we're still doing, like the Nunn-Lugar Agreement on nuclear weapons, and of course our partnership when it comes to sending astronauts up to the International Space Station?
No, I think the United States can continue to have proper relationships with Russia when it's practical and can be worked out. I just don't think we can have any illusion what the current regime is trying to do, and we need to defend ourselves from that. I mean, I think there should be severe penalties for Russian interference in American democracy and in U.S. elections. So far, I'm very disappointed with what we've done to counter the Russians. So I think you have to push back on Russia where they are threatening our interest and threatening democracy, but to the degree that we can work with them in practical ways, I think we should do that.
What does Trump's more unilateral foreign policy mean for the future of negotiation as a tool of statecraft and diplomacy, particularly in a time when they're considering serious budget cuts for the State Department?
There are two elements of the Trump foreign policy that bother me. One is the unilateral and nationalist nature of it, that is, America first, which implies that we don't really care about the things that we've promoted for years, like promoting democracy and human rights and basic democratic values, but we're looking at it from a very selfish standpoint. And the second thing that bothers me about this foreign policy is the militarism of it. They seem to believe that there's a military solution to every problem, and of course that's not true, and it's a very dangerous attitude. The appointment of John Bolton as the National Security Advisor is particularly alarming because he is a very militant and extreme, I would say, conservative figure who's never seen a war he didn't want to participate in. I am also horrified by what this administration has done in the Foreign Service. I mean, cutting deep cuts in the State Department budget, the essentially purging the senior Foreign Service, and a kind of a resentment or hostility toward the professionals in the Foreign Service of the United States, which I think is not only unfair, but it's also dangerous. These people are critical to our relationships abroad, and reducing that capability does not support our national interest. And I say that as someone who's not a Foreign Service officer. I'm not a career foreign service professional. I'm a civil servant and a former military officer, but I have great respect for them and for what they do, and I think it's tragic what the administration has done to damage our foreign service.
This isn't a new problem, though. Many Americans see how our military affects foreign policy, but might not even be aware of our career diplomats. How would you say the military and the Foreign Service work in tandem when it comes to diplomacy?
The Foreign Service of the United States is in some ways an alternative to the use of military force. It allows us to use our influence through our relationships rather than through military pressure. And that's almost always preferable. I mean, having done a career in the military and worked long and hard with the Foreign Service, I believe that the use of military force is a last resort, not a first resort. And between the emergence of a conflict and the resolution of that conflict are many, many steps before you get to military force. So As I said earlier, the diplomacy is the first line of defense, and it is a way, is a peaceful way to exert American power and influence around the globe without putting our people and our resources at risk in a military conflict.
With all of that in mind, do you have any thoughts on Trump's future diplomatic endeavors, particularly this planned summit with North Korea?
Well, I generally am in favor of talking when we can talk, but I have many, many questions about the North Korean meeting. First of all, we don't have a Secretary of State in place. We do not have a U.S. ambassador in Korea. Much of the talent at the top of the State Department has left or been pushed out. So we really don't have the professional leadership in the world of foreign policy that we should have, specifically on Korea, but more generally pretty much around the world. We just have a new national security advisor who's fairly militant. If this was handled in a professional way, I would be in favor of it, but I'm very concerned that this is not being properly prepared. Ordinarily, a meeting with the United States president and a foreign leader is the last step in negotiating a solution. It's not the first. So to push the president into a meeting that's ill-prepared with Kim Jong-un, I think, is dangerous. Now, maybe they'll get lucky, but I don't think you ought to rely on luck. You ought to rely on professional competence, and I have real concerns about that. The other element involved here is China. I think the key to North Korea is not Pyongyang, but it's in Beijing. I mean, the North Koreans couldn't be doing any of this without the at least acceptance of leaders in Beijing, and I think the United States ought to be much more engaged with the Chinese on what's going on in North Korea than some big meeting with Kim Jong-un that may not achieve anything.
Speaking of China, do you see a danger in Beijing stepping in and taking more of a leadership role in areas of the world where the United States has built up alliances and diplomatic agreements in the past, but with Trump's more unilateral foreign policy, we have not given those areas as much attention?
The international community, international environment that we live in hates a vacuum, and if the United States breaks away from its leadership role around the world, someone will fill it. I think China sees themselves as a powerful leader that would like to step in, particularly in Asia, but in other regions as well. I think the behavior of Russia also is fairly aggressive because they sense a U.S. withdrawal from important parts of the world. So, yes, Washington moving away from a traditional leadership role, particularly as it applies to the promotion of democracy and human rights, I think is a mistake, and the Chinese will certainly step in. They're very aggressive in the economic sphere in Southeast Asia, and I think we can continue to see them become, we will continue to see them become more aggressive as they sense that the United States is pulling back.
Is there anything you'd like to add about diplomacy in general or your upcoming speech at NIU?
I'm very excited about going to DeKalb and speaking at Northern Illinois at their seminar on Thursday the 19th. I'm going to be talking about the United States' engagement in the Balkans during the breakup of Yugoslavia, but I'm not just talking about the history of that. I want to talk about why that was a success and how it worked and compare that to the current situation and to draw out some lessons that I learned that I think are important for America as we move forward in the world today. This is a dangerous time and a dangerous world, and we need the best talent we can get working with the leaders of the country. And I'm afraid that in all the controversy and drama of this nonstop news cycle in the White House, that we lose sense of our priorities and where the big issues are, and that can lead us down a path that we might not intend to go.
Finally, with this flood of information coming in an inwardly focused America, how do you get more people interested in foreign policy, both the kinds of agreements that you and other diplomats have set up in the past and our relationships in the world today?
I think we have to recognize as citizens that the United States doesn't live in isolation. I mean, there's a natural tendency for everybody, me included, to look at our piece of the world and see that as the most important element of it. But we live in a big world and a dangerous world. And since 1945, the United States has been the leader, and we've established an international structure that favored us, working closely with democracy, promoting democracies, working with international institutions that we created, NATO, the United Nations, and others. And those values that we have proposed, those relationships, are the key to our security. So Americans just need to understand that we don't live in isolation. We are engaged whether we like it or not, and we need to be have the best possible people working on that. And we need to be very cautious about how we use military force and how we go about our business in the world. And that means that we need the very talented, high-quality professionals in the Foreign Service to represent us around the world.
James Pardue is a career U.S. Army officer and a veteran diplomat who's held positions including Ambassador to Bulgaria and Deputy Assistant Secretary General for Operations at NATO. He's the author of the recently published book Peacemakers, American Leadership and the End of Genocide in the Balkans. Pardue is the keynote speaker at the second annual Conference on Global Problems and Community Praxis at Northern Illinois University. I'm Chase Cavanaugh.